And you're tuned in to CITR 101.9 FM in Scalds Hall, and we have a very special pre-recorded show for you today because there is about to be a fire drill here in the beautiful SUV building. So, if you are not going to be part of that, then stay tuned. You are tuned in to CITR 101.9 FM, and this is Scalds Hall, and a very special episode for us. We have here today Mr. Ryan Johnson. Hello.
How you doing?
Pretty good. You are going to be playing Basil Fawlty in the upcoming Vagabond Theatre's production of Fawlty Towers.
That I am.
Yes. So how did that all get started? How did you end up as an actor?
Actually, that's kind of a funny story. I actually tried to not be an actor when I was a child. You know how elementary school productions do their little things? I tried my best to actually stay off the stage. I tried to do tech, I would do backstage work, all that stuff. So I tried to actually stay away from it. It wasn't until grade 9 when I found that I was making my friends laugh, that I enjoyed it. I enjoyed getting that reaction from my friends and so forth. So my mother suggested I go into the theater program, and from there it just went to community theater and paid gigs, and away we went.
How long have you been acting?
16 years. All over the Lower Mainland, the interior, and about half of Alberta.
And have you done any other sort of acting beyond theater?
Well, yeah, I mean, I've done the standard extra work for film and television and so forth, and I've done some small internet videos and so forth. That's really about it. I will admit, my first love is theater. You learn so much, and you have that instant gratification from the audience.
You're taking on the mantle of playing Basil Fawlty. How do you approach portraying a character that is so iconic in the popular culture?
Well, yeah, exactly. When I got cast from the director, I was very grateful to be cast and everything, and the moment I hung up the phone, it just came over me of, oh no, I've got to fill John Cleese's big shoes. Oh, man. Yeah, it was very much a shock to the system there. But I will admit, I don't want to really play John Cleese's Basil. When people come and see the show, I don't want them to go, oh, that's John Cleese up on stage. I want them to look at it and go, that's Basil Fawlty, another version of Basil Fawlty. So after I came to that conclusion, it kind of went away about the iconicness of it.
Are you involved in any additional upcoming projects beyond Fawlty Towers that you might want to tell a potential audience about?
Yes, actually. I've just recently been cast in the White Rocks production of Fools, which goes up in April. That starts April 23rd at the White Rock Playhouse. Other than that, I mean, I do work for a company called Flixer Entertainment, and whenever they hire us, I get work.
Do you have a social media or online presence if people are interested in your work that they can find out about what you do?
I will admit, not really. I'm kind of a curious actor in the sense that I don't really do this for the recognition. I don't do it for the fame. I don't want people to, well, not that I don't want them to know my name, but I just love performing. So just keep an eye out for theater productions. Even if I'm not in them, go and see theater. It is such a different experience from film and television and all that stuff. And also just that if you go to a theater production, you think to yourself, if anything goes wrong, they've got to deal with it. It's not like they can just stop and edit it and cut it or whatever. They've got to deal with the situation right there. And just that thrill of knowing the actors have to deal with that is kind of a neat little adrenaline rush.
Do you have any advice for people who are considering getting into theater, potential new actors out there?
Yes. Now, any advice I give, just keep in mind that this advice worked for me. Everybody is different. Everybody has their own path. But if I had to give any piece of advice for upcoming actors is don't worry about post-secondary. Go into community theater. You learn 10 times as more on-hands training doing a show. And if you do get cast in a show, or even if you don't, help out backstage, doing props, doing whatever. If you do want to do acting, help out as much as you can to learn the process, to learn the sequence of events and what people have to go through and so forth. And I guess another advice that I have, at least for my method, is I just watch a lot of performers. Some of my favorite performers, yes, they're television, but that's where the media is. David Tennant, David Hyde Pierce from Frasier. I love watching Patrick Stewart. Just watch their movements, their mannerisms, their pauses, stuff like that.
Yes, and one last thing before we go, a treat for our listeners out there for Scalds Hall. Ryan and I are going to be performing briefly a scene as a preview for our upcoming production that we're in together.
Yes, yes. Lord Melbury, I'm so sorry about what happened earlier. It really...
Please, think nothing of it.
Oh, yes, but it was just so...
Please, it was the smallest of accidents. It could have occurred anywhere.
Yes, but I...
No, I've forgotten all about it.
Oh, jeez, well, that's most... you're very... Lord Melbury, would you allow me to offer you dinner here tonight, as our guest?
Oh, that's exceedingly kind of you. Unfortunately, I have a previous engagement tonight.
Oh.
Oh, actually...
Yes?
There is one thing.
Oh, good.
Might you cash a small check? I'm playing golf this afternoon.
Oh, absolutely. How much?
I'd rather not go into town.
Mm-hmm.
Could you manage 50... Oh, 100.
100? Oh, absolutely. Will 100 be enough? 150? 2? 160?
Let me see. Dinner tonight, a few drinks. Oh, it's the weekend, isn't it? Would 200 be all right?
Oh, yeah. Oh, absolutely. Oh, tremendous. Oh, I'm so happy. I'll send someone into town straight away and have it for you when you get back.
Yes, that would be splendid.
Thank you, Lord Melbury.
Thank you very much.
Oh, and scene.
And we were here with Ryan Johnson today on Scald's Hall at CITR 101.9 FM. Okay, hello and welcome to CITR 101.9 FM and Scald's Hall. We are here with Kathleen Driscoll. Hello, Kathleen.
Hello.
How are you doing tonight?
I'm doing very good, thank you.
Excellent. So, Kathleen, you are an actress, correct?
By night, I'm an actress. By day, I'm a special needs preschool teacher.
How did you get started in acting?
Well, it started in high school, and then I didn't continue it after high school. And then when I turned 40, I decided I wanted to get back into acting. So I took a course at a community center, and then I went for audition for Theater Under the Stars and got my first role, and the rest is history.
So how long have you been acting?
Well, it's been 16 years now.
And what kind of productions have you been involved in that time?
Well, I've been in over probably 35 productions, both musical and straight plays. I really do enjoy musical, but I also love the drama as well.
I see.
And comedy.
Have you done any work beyond
this? Yes, actually I have. I was in a commercial, for one commercial, so I have my one credit mm-hmm. towards ACTRA.
Yes. And for our listeners out there listening, one's enough to become an apprentice member, but you need about 3, I believe, to become a full member. Well, you're sitting on one more than I am. How does the theater tie in with the rest of your life?
I think I just was looking for something in my life at that time, and I've always loved drama, and I was pretty good at it in high school. I got recognition in high school, but unfortunately, due to circumstances, I couldn't continue it. So the opportunity came up. A friend of mine was taking courses, and I thought, yeah, I'd like to try this again. And at the time, I was also starting to teach, and I'm a late bloomer, you see. And also, I found that being on the stage and gaining confidence in myself helped me with my job during the day and gaining confidence in myself.
And I'm also, as my listeners know, a teacher turned actor. So do you have, in all that time, a favorite role that you have done?
Oh, goodness. At the time, every role is the favorite.
You are involved right now in the production of Fawlty Towers.
Yes.
From the Vagabond Theatres production.
Mm-hmm.
Are you involved in any other projects as well?
Not at the moment.
Do you have anything else the upcoming after Fawlty Towers?
Not at the present moment, but it depends on what plays are coming up and what auditions. For a woman of my age, the roles aren't so many.
Are there any roles out there that you would like to play?
Oh, my goodness. Nothing really comes to mind, to be honestly truth. I just sort of wing it as it goes along and what comes out. Then I do a little study on it and then see if the role I feel would work for myself. And other than that, I don't really have a plan forward. I'd like to direct someday. That I do. But I want to take some courses first. Mm-hmm. And some courses are available through Theatre BC, which are inexpensive. And so I'm hoping to do that and also go under the direction of a director and become an assistant director.
How did you approach being asked to come out to an audition for a role that so many people already have a very clear image of in their heads? You'll be playing the several parts, including Mrs. Ellis Richards.
Actually, this is the first time that I am performing close to the character that's from the TV show. I've never done that before. Usually you develop your own character no matter who the original character is. But I found because this is such a cult and everybody's expecting a certain type, I sort of lean towards that type. Thought it would actually work this time. So it helped me develop my character. So I did watch her.
And do you have any advice for young and upcoming actors?
Get to know your play. Take courses, scene study, character study, body position, everything like that. Also to remember to have fun. I'm doing it for fun because it's community theater. But also I'm professional as well because I know that we are there to do a job for people who are paying to see us. But we are also having fun too.
So coming up in just a moment, we are going to have a scene with Mrs. Alice Richards, a sort of a preview for our play Fawlty Towers, which will be premiering at the end of next week on February 28th. Ryan can't be here with us today, so we're going to have me fill in for the part of Mr. Fawlty. So that'll be coming up in just a moment here on Scald's Hall. Good morning, madam. Can I help you?
Are you the manager?
I am the owner, madam.
What?
I am the owner.
I want to speak to the manager.
I am the manager, too.
What?
I am the manager as well. Manahab. He Manahab. Shut up.
Oh, you're what?
I'm the manager.
What?
I'm the manager.
Yes, I know. You've just told me. What's the matter with you? Now, listen to me. I booked a room with a bath. When I book a room with a bath, I expect to get a bath.
You've got a bath.
I'm not paying £7.20 per night plus VAT for a room without a bath.
There is your bath.
You call that a bath? It's not big enough to drown a mouse. It's disgraceful.
I wish you would, Mouse. I'd show you.
And another thing. I asked for a room with a view.
Deaf, mad, and blind. This is the view as far as I can remember, madam. Yes, this is it.
When I pay for a room with a view, I expect something more interesting than that.
That is Torquay, madam.
Well, that's not good enough.
Well, may I ask what you were hoping to see out of a Torquay hotel bedroom window? Sydney Opera House, perhaps? The Hanging Gardens of Babylon? Herds of wildebeest sweeping majestically?
Don't be silly. I expect to be able to see the sea.
You can see the sea. It's over there between the land and the sky.
I'd need a telescope to see that.
Well, may I suggest moving to a hotel closer to the sea, or preferably in it.
Now listen to me. I'm not satisfied, but I have decided to stay here. However, I shall expect a reduction.
Why? Because Krakatoa is not erupting at the moment.
Because the room is cold, the bath is too small, the view is invisible, and the radio doesn't work.
No, the radio works. You don't.
What are you doing?
I'll see if I can fix it, you scabby old bat. I think I've got something, then.
What?
Madam, don't think me rude, but may I ask, do you by any chance have a hearing aid?
A what?
A hearing aid.
Yes, I have a hearing aid.
Would you like me to get it mended?
Mended? It's working perfect all right.
No, it isn't.
I just don't have it turned on at the moment.
Why not?
The battery runs down. Now, listen. Now, what sort of a reduction are you going to give me on this room?
60% if you turn it on.
What?
And thank you very much, Kathleen.
Thank you.
Yes, and so that is a brief taste of what you will get if you come down and see us.
It's called Bernie Legge Theatre.
Bernie Legge Theatre.
At Queen's Park in New Westminster.
Yes, and we're opening February 28th.
Thursday, Friday, Saturday nights, and Sunday matinee.
That's right. Well, thank you very much for coming.
Thank you.
There's a whale, there's a whale, there's the whale fishes blow, and the whale was in full view. Whale fish, whale fish, whale fish.
Are you a senior undergrad or graduate student wanting to supercharge your professional development and meet the right people in the ocean sciences? Then register now for Power Up, networking and training on February 27th, sponsored by Ocean Networks Canada. For more information, go to regonline.ca/powerup.onc.
What sort of fish are you?
You are tuned into CITR 101.9 FM, and this is Scald's Hall, and we are here with my castmate for Fawlty Towers, Casey Poore. Hello.
Hello. How's it going?
Not too bad, not too bad. So,
Tell us a little bit about yourself. How did you get started as an actor, Casey?
I'd always kind of wanted to do acting and theater and all that sort of stuff, but the drama program in my high school wasn't really existent at all until I'd actually graduated, and then I went back and upgraded, and we'd gotten a new, better teacher who I actually maintained contact with because it ended up being an immensely positive experience for me. And essentially, she suggested that after I graduate, I should probably look into doing some theater in university and whatnot, and they suggested that the theater program at the University of the Fraser Valley was really good. So I ended up going there, and I was there for 2 years and did a lot of stuff there and got really into it, and eventually I transferred to BCIT and did some television behind-the-scenes type stuff, and now I'm generally trying to do 2 plays a year ever since I got out there, and that's just sort of the story.
I see, and how long have you been acting now?
That would have been 2007 I started.
About 6 years?
Yeah, 6 years, something like that.
I see, so it's quite a while.
Yeah.
Yes, and so you said you do about 2 plays a year, so what kind of productions have you been in so far?
There's this one festival that I've been in for the past 5 years. I'm actually doing it again this year. Probably going to be my last performance in it. It's called the Directors Festival at UFB. It's all one-act plays, like student-produced, sometimes written one-act plays. So I've done a lot of those. I also was in Rosencrantz and Guildenstern Are Dead with the Society for Creative Anachronism a few years ago, which was pretty good. And I was in Spring Awakening with a company that was started by some friends of mine called Coup d'Etat Theater in Chilliwack a little while ago, which is a full-length play. And yeah, mostly that sort of thing.
I see. And are you involved in any other upcoming projects?
Yeah. Like I said, I'm in the Directors Festival again. We're going to go to stage in April. We actually start rehearsals pretty quickly. As another one-act play written by the director, who's a friend of mine, Kate Archer. It's called Miss Somewhere. It's about 3 girls growing up and sort of doing their thing. I play like 5 different characters that they meet throughout. It's sort of a surreal type thing.
I see. If people would like to get to know a little bit more about you and your work, do you have any social media feeds out there?
I'm not on Twitter. I kind of have an anti-Twitter thing going, but I am on Facebook. I'm on LinkedIn. I never check LinkedIn, but I'm on it. And also, if you go to YouTube and search Permanent Solo, I'm on there. Permanent Solo is the production company name that I operate under when I do all my behind-the-scenes type stuff. So you'll find a couple music videos. Possibly, I can't remember if I've got some interviews with some bands and stuff on there. But yeah, there's some stuff you can check out.
All right, and we're going to provide links to those in our social media for CITR 101.9 FM on Scalds Hall.
Thank you.
Yes. And so do you have any advice for people who are up and coming into acting?
It's pretty well the same regardless. Just get involved, you know? Like if you want to do theater, do theater. If you want to do some movies, do theater, because you're not going to do any movies off the top, at least nothing good. Get out there, get some experience, do some stuff. You know, there's community theater all over the place. Get involved. Your local high schools, your local universities, all of them have theater programs, and all of them would be more than happy to have you. Even if you don't get cast, get involved behind the stage, behind the scenes. Just do stuff, you know, and sooner or later, you'll get on the stage and you can do your thing and get better at it and improve. And it's just nothing but a positive experience. I can't possibly recommend it enough.
Well, thank you. The Fawlty Towers is a very iconic TV series. What was it like to get cast in doing something that has such a wide range of name recognition?
It's been tricky, to be honest with you, because it's sort of a funny story, actually. When I was a little kid, my grandparents actually bought the VHS box set of Fawlty Towers, and my parents were watching it, and I sort of stumbled into the room while they were watching the Germans episode and caught Basil Fawlty doing the funny walk, and I didn't understand it at all. He's goose-stepping, for anybody who hasn't seen it. He's goose-stepping and shouting and pretending to be Hitler, but I didn't get it, and I just thought it was a hilarious walk that he was doing. I laughed really hard, and my mom was like, hey, he laughed, and he thought that was funny, but he clearly didn't get it, so it doesn't matter that it's sort of a grown-up and off-color joke. So they let me watch all of them, and I loved all of them, and I watched them perpetually, like it got to the point where I could recite a lot of the episodes word for word. So that was something that I grew up with, and then when I checked local auditions and saw that someone was doing Fawlty Towers, it was literally the first thing that popped up when I typed open auditions in Vancouver into Google. And and I was just like, well, I can't not do that, you know. So I went in knowing full well that if I went in, I was going to end up driving myself insane trying to be, you know, honest and sort of do justice to the original material. And I feel like I've done an okay job trying to remain faithful to it and do a good job and pay homage to it without actually just doing it again, right? So that's kind of the problem. So I'm constantly fighting against just delivering all the lines in the exact same way that the actors in the original show did. But I feel like it's turned out pretty well. You know, fairly content with how I've done, and hopefully people will enjoy it as much as I've enjoyed it so far.
Yes, and we can give them a brief taste of that now. You and I happen to be the title characters from The Hotel Inspectors.
We are indeed the title characters of Hotel Inspectors.
And their roles are very brief, but let's give our listeners a little bit of a taste of what that will be like. 25 rooms, 12 with private bathrooms.
Yes, well, why don't you have dinner here, and I'll go try the Claremont. Says the owner's one Basil Fawlty.
And then, as you know, everything degenerates into insanity.
Yes, which will be wonderful to see. So,
yeah, for sure.
We're opening next week.
Is it next week?
Yeah, it's next week. We're opening next week, Thursday, February 28th is our debut. We're running until March 23rd at the Bernie Legge Theater. Mm-hmm. Please come out and see us.
Shazbot.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome, sir.
You're tuned into Skald's Hall at CITR 101.9 FM. Skald is the Germanic word for bard.
Okay. See, that's funny because actually I have, you know, some friends who tend to reference sort of absurd, like really obscure historical things like that. Mm-hmm. And a friend of mine made a joke about like the Norse skalds a few months ago, and I was like, what the hell is a skald? And mm-hmm. now you've inadvertently explained it to me.
Yes.
And thank you for that.
Oh, not at all, not at all.
World of Wine is back in town for the 35th annual Vancouver International Wine Festival, February 25th to March 3rd. 55 amazing events featuring 175 wineries from 15 countries. Don't miss the latest and greatest vintages. Tickets on sale now at vanwinefest.ca.
And welcome back to us here at CITR 101.9 FM and an uneventful fire drill later, and we are ready for the second half of our show. And what we're going to be taking a look at for the bottom half of the hour is the idea that Edgar Allan Poe once put forward called the unity of effect. Now, what is that for those of you out there who are not familiar? It simply is that Edgar Allan Poe once put forward a theory that the best way to experience stories is to experience stories that you can comfortably digest in one sitting. And so things like his short stories or his shorter poems, for example. Now, there is a definite benefit to that, to being able to get the whole effect at once. However, there is also the effect of being able to draw out a story over a longer period of time in order to build a dramatic narrative. Now, which one is better? Let's just experience both of those for the rest of today, and I'll let you decide. So what we're going to be hearing first is an excerpt from an old Batman serial that is now in the public domain, and then we're going to be hearing a dramatic reading of one of Edgar Allan Poe's stories himself, The Cask of Amontillado. So sit back, relax, and take a listen and decide for yourself which one is the better experience for you.
The Thousand Injuries of Fortune. The Thousand Injuries of Fortune.
Now, the story begins 3 years ago when Robin and I were in England. We'd been invited to dinner at Dumfries Hall, an old English country manor, the home of my friend Sir Alfred Dumfries. It was a wild and lonely night, with a storm brewing. And the fact that Dumfries Hall was located in the center of a barren moor didn't help matters any. There were five of us at the dinner table. Sir Alfred, charming Lady Marsden, gruff old Sir Sidney Mordred, Robin, and myself. We had just finished dessert and were engaged in conversation.
More coffee, Mr. Wayne?
Thank you, no, Lady Marsden.
Well, you may pour me another cup, by Joe.
Of course, Sir Mordred.
Oh, beastly weather. And beastly hole to be having it in, I must say. If I'd known the weather was going to be as rotten as this, I'd have stayed in London, I declare. How are you standing it, Wayne?
Oh, it isn't the weather I mind, Sir Mordred. It's the fact that it seems to make this old baronial mansion so chill and damp. A wood-burning fireplace is decorative, but I'd prefer steam radiators myself. You were about to say something, Sir Alfred?
I was about to say that Sir Mordred, since he has far more money than I, can have those improvements put in after he buys Dumfries Hall.
Buy Dumfries Hall? Oh, I say, do you still expect me to buy this ruddy place, Alf?
You said you would if I proved it wasn't haunted.
Haunted? Gosh, is Dumfries Hall haunted, Sir Alfred?
Of course not, Robin. It's just that a silly legend has grown up about the place. A legend concerning a monster.
Now, look, Alf, let's face facts, what? I need a country estate, and I'm willing to buy this place if you can assure me the death chamber is not haunted. And by Joe, you know there's only one way to prove that.
That's exactly how I plan to prove it.
Sir Alfred, you don't really mean
it. I most certainly do, Lady Marsden.
Oh, but you can't. Anyone who spent even 5 minutes in that room after midnight...
Listen to me, all of you. There's not one of you at this table who is not aware of the fact that I'm a poor man. Yes, a poor man. Oh, I have lands, estates, but they cost me money. They don't make me money. I've got to sell this place, and Sir Mordred says he'll buy it if I can prove Dumfries Hall is not haunted. Well, I intend to prove it tonight.
Whatever?
Oh, nothing to alarm yourself about, Lady Marsden. There are wild dogs on the moor. Sometimes they bay and howl.
Yes, yes, of course. Silly of me to be so nervous.
Well, as I was saying, I shall enter the death chamber at midnight and remain there until morning. I shall prove that the legend has no foundation in fact.
If you don't mind telling me, Sir Alfred, what exactly is the legend of this death chamber? I have only the vaguest idea.
Of course I'll tell you, Bruce. There's a room in this house which has not been unlocked for over a century. No one has entered it in all that time. Why? Because the last three people who slept in it died under rather mysterious circumstances. They were found stiffened by death into, shall we say, unpleasant shape.
And you propose to enter that room tonight, alone?
I do.
If these people died, as you say...
I don't say they did. The legend says it. Oh, I don't deny people have died in that room, but I am convinced they died natural death. The rest is distortion, old wives' tales that have become more distorted with each telling.
But, Sir Alfred, what of the monster?
Oh, more of the same legend, Bruce. It's said that several of the people who died screamed out something about a monster. What exactly, no one ever knew. It is also said that a strange being has been seen prowling the corridors of Dumfries Hall. Well, I don't believe a word of it. I shall prove tonight that the hall is not haunted.
By Joe, Elf, you prove it, and I'll buy Dumfries at your own figure.
I'll prove it. At midnight, I'll enter the so-called death chamber. We'll unlock the door together. I'll go in, and the rest of you can wait outside. And you may be sure I'll come out alive.
Well, it's midnight, Sir Alfred.
Yes, I wish you'd stop standing there and staring at me some more. It is as though you were seeing me for the last time. Nothing's going to happen, I assure you. I'm merely going to explode a silly and stupid legend.
Oh, look here, Alf. I'll buy the blooming place. Now, you needn't prove it's not haunted. I'll either keep the death chamber locked or call in a firm of London chappies and have the ghosts exterminated.
That's slightly extorting of you, Sir Mordred, but I can't let you do it. Now, look here. Everything's ready, so don't try to stop me. Here's the death chamber before us. Here in my hand is the ancient key to it. By George, they made them large enough in those days, didn't they? Yes, and the wild dogs are supplying just the right ghostly atmosphere.
Oh, gosh, Sir Alfred, I am scared. I hate to see you go into that room alone like
that. Don't fret your young head about me, Robin.
Sir Alfred's quite right, Robin.
Yeah, but
just trying to prove what we've been proving for a long time, that ghosts do not exist except in the imagination.
Yes, of course. That's perfectly silly, that whole matter.
Oh, stop looking so glum, Mordred. This is a lark. I tell you what we'll do. I keep talking to you from inside the room. So long as you hear my voice, you'll know there's nothing wrong. And let's open the ruddy room. I'll just insert the key. So. Turn it. So. Turns easily enough, eh? Now then I'll just open the door. Now, if you'll just hand me that lighted candle, I'll go in.
Well, Fred, by Joe, are you sure?
Oh, come now, not another word, Mordred. Kendall, thanks. Well, here I go. Wish me luck.
Good luck, old boy. Oh, I don't know why, but I have a feeling I could use a stimulant.
Nonsense, Sir Mordred. And anyway, we must all of us stay here now.
Yes, and keep talking to Sir Alfred. Sir Alfred, everything all right?
Top hole, Bruce. Rather a musty old place, to say the least. Hardly enough air in here to keep the candle burning. But quite safe, don't worry.
Gee, sir, is he going to stay in there all night?
Oh, no, lady. If he remains in there half an hour, it'll be enough. According to the legend, death always occurred between midnight and the half hour following. I say, Alf, quite comfortable, are you?
Oh, yes, quite. I'm enjoying it, as a matter of fact. Bring on your monsters.
It really sounds as if he is enjoying it.
Why shouldn't he? As he said, it's nothing but a lark.
Oh, that dog again. Every time it howls, my blood runs cold. Hey, by Joe, Alf, I'll drive aboard this place. The first thing I'm going to do is clear the moor of those blasted dogs. You care to take on the job yourself? You're a good shot. I say, Alf. Would you care to take on the job yourself?
Oh, he doesn't answer.
No. No, it can't be.
Just a moment. Sir Alfred, this is Bruce Wayne. Sir Alfred!
Not a sound.
Don't move anyone. I'm going in there.
No, Mr. Wayne, you mustn't.
Don't move, I said. Sir Alfred!
Mr. Wayne, what is it? What's happened?
Stay where you are.
Sir Wayne, tell me what's happened.
I can't tell you.
Please let me go to him. I must go to him.
No, you mustn't go to him. No one can enter that room.
Austin Clark, born July 26, 1934, is a Canadian novelist, essayist, and short story writer who lives in Toronto, Ontario. Born in St. James, Barbados in 1955, Clark moved to Canada where he attended the University of Toronto. He's a distinguished novelist and short story writer who has explored the immigrant experience with humor, compassion, happiness, and sorrow. Through his prolific literary output, he's recorded the changing face of the country, giving voice to the resilience, courage, and loneliness often felt by people who come to Canada to start a new life. By his own example, he has broadened the horizons for black writers, encouraging them to develop their creative talent. His contributions as a respected author, teacher, and community activist have helped Canadians understand our diverse roots as well as our universal humanity.
This PSA was brought to you in support of Black History Month on CITR 101.9 FM.
Where's the money?
CITR.
You want that money?
CITR.
Where's the money?
CITR.
Where's the money?
CITR.
Where's the f***ing money?
CITR.
The 2013 CITR Fund Drive is from February 28th to March 8th. Our goal is to raise $30,000 bills to help get new soundboards in all three of our studios. This means we need help from listeners just like you. To donate, call 604-822-8648. That's 604-822-8648. Or go online to CITR.ca and help support the station you love.
The thousand injuries of Fortunato I had borne as best I could, but when he ventured upon insult, I vowed revenge. You, who so well know the nature of my soul, will not suppose, however, I gave utterance to a threat. At length I would be avenged. This was a point definitively settled. But the very definitiveness with which it was resolved precluded the idea of risk. I must not only punish, but punish with impunity. A wrong is unredressed when retribution overtakes its redresser. It is equally unredressed when the avenger fails to make himself felt as such to him who has done the wrong. It must be understood that neither by word nor deed had I given Fortunato cause to doubt my goodwill. I continued, as was my wont, to smile in his face, and he did not perceive that my smile now was at the thought of his immolation. He had a weak point, this Fortunato, although in other regards he was a man to be respected and even feared. He prided himself on the connoisseurship of wine. Few Italians have the virtuoso spirit. For the most part, their enthusiasm is adopted to suit the time and opportunity, to practice imposture upon British and Austrian millionaires. In painting and gemmery, Fortunato, like his countrymen, was a quack. But in the matter of old wines, he was sincere. In this respect, I did not differ from him materially. I was skillful in the Italian vintages myself, and bought largely whenever I could. It was about dusk one evening, during the supreme madness of the carnival season, that I encountered my friend. He accosted me with such excessive warmth, for he had been much drinking. The man wore motley. He had on a tight-fitting party-striped dress, and his head was surmounted by the conical cap and bells. I was so pleased to see him that I thought I should never have done wringing his hand. I said to him, "My dear Fortunato, you are luckily met. How remarkably well you are looking today. But I have received a pipe of what passes for Amontillado, and I have my doubts."
"How?" said he. "Amontillado, a pipe? Impossible! And in the middle of the carnival?"
"I have my doubts," I replied, "and I was silly enough to pay the full Amontillado price without consulting you in the matter. You were not to be found, and I was fearful of losing a bargain."
"Amontillado?"
"I have my doubts."
"Amontillado?"
"And I must satisfy them."
"Amontillado!"
"As you are engaged, I am on my way to Lucchesi. If anyone has a critical turn, it is he. He will tell me."
"Lucchesi cannot tell Amontillado from sherry."
"And yet some fools will have it. His taste is a match for your own."
"Come, let us go."
"Whither?"
"To your vaults."
"My friend, no. I will not impose upon your good nature. I perceive you have an engagement. Lucchesi."
"I have no engagement. Come."
"My friend, no. It is not the engagement, but the severe cold with which I perceive you are afflicted. The vaults are insufferably damp. They are encrusted with nitre.
Let us go, nevertheless. The cold is merely nothing. Amontillado, you have been imposed upon. As for Lucchesi, he cannot distinguish sherry from Amontillado.
Thus speaking, Fortunato possessed himself of my arm. Putting on a mask of black silk, and drawing a guacleri around my person, I suffered him to hurry me to my palazzo. There were no attendants at home. They had absconded to make merry in honor of the time. I had told them I should not return until morning, and gave them explicit orders not to stir from the house. These orders were sufficient, I well knew, to ensure their immediate departure, one and all, as soon as my back was turned. I took from their sconces two flambeaux, and giving one to Fortunato, bowed him through several suites of rooms to the archway that led into the vaults. I passed down a long and winding staircase, requesting him to be cautious as he followed. We came at length to the foot of the descent, and stood together on the damp ground of the catacombs of the Montresors. The gait of my friend was unsteady, and the bells upon his cap jingled as he strode.
"The pipe," said he.
"It is further on," said I, "but observe the white webwork which gleams with the cavern walls." He turned towards me, and looked into my eyes with two filmy orbs that distilled the rheum of intoxication.
"Nitre?"
he asked at length. "Nitre," I replied. "How long have you had that cough?" My poor friend found it impossible to reply for many minutes.
"It is nothing,"
he said at last. "Come," I said, with decision. "We will go back. Your health is precious. You are rich, respected, admired, beloved. You are happy, as once I was. You are a man who will be missed. For me it is no matter. We will go back. You will be ill, and I cannot be responsible. Besides, there is Lucchesi."
"Enough," said he. "The cough is a mere nothing. It will not kill me. I shall not die of a cough."
"True, true," I replied. "And indeed, I had no intention of alarming you unnecessarily. But you should use all proper caution. A draught of this medoc will help protect us from the damps." Here I knocked off the neck of a bottle, which I drew from a long row of its fellows that lay upon the mould. "Drink," I said, presenting him the wine. He raised it to his lips with a leer. He paused and nodded to me familiarly, while his bells jingled.
"I drink," he said, "to the buried that repose around us."
"And I, to your long life." He again took my arm, and we proceeded.
"These vaults," he said, "are extensive."
"The Montresors," I replied, "were a great and numerous family."
"I forget your arms."
"A huge human foot door in a field of azure. The foot crushes a serpent rampant whose fangs are embedded into the heel."
"And the motto?"
"Nemo me impune lacessit."
"Good,"
he said. The wine sparkled in his eyes, and the bells jingled. My own fancy grew warm with the medoc. We had passed through the walls of piled bones, with casks and puncheons intermingling, into the inmost recesses of the catacombs. I paused again, and this time I made bold to seize Fortunato by the arm above the elbow. "The nitre," I said. "See, it increases. It hangs like moss upon the vaults. We are below the river's bed.
The drops of moisture trickle among the bones. Come, we will go back ere it is too late. Your cough.
It is nothing, he said. Let us go on, but first another draught of the medoc.
I broke and reached him a flacon of de grave. He emptied it in a breath. His eyes flashed with a fierce light. He laughed and threw the bottle upwards with a gesticulation I did not understand. I looked at him in surprise. He repeated the movement, a grotesque one.
You do not comprehend?
He said. Not I, I replied.
Then you are not of the Brotherhood.
How?
You are not of the Masons.
Yes, yes, I said. Yes, yes.
You, a Mason? Impossible.
A Mason, I replied.
A sign, he said.
It is this, I answered, producing a trowel from beneath the folds of my roquelaire.
Ho, you jest,
he exclaimed, recoiling a few paces.
But let us proceed to the Amontillado.
Be it so, I said, replacing the tool beneath my cloak. Again offering him my arm, he leaned upon it heavily. We continued our route in search of the Amontillado. We passed through a range of low arches, descended, passed on, and descending again, arrived at a deep crypt in which the foulness of the air caused our flambeau rather to glow than shine. At the most remote end of the crypt, there appeared another less spacious. Its walls had been lined with human remains, piled to the vault overhead in the fashion of the great catacombs of Paris. Three sides of this interior crypt were still ornamented in this manner. From the fourth, the bones had been thrown down and lay promiscuously upon the earth, forming at one point a mound of some size. Within the walls thus exposed by the displacing of the bones, we perceived a steel interior recess, in depth about 4 feet, in width 3, in height 6 or 7. It seemed to have been constructed for no especial use in itself, but formed merely the interval between the two colossal supports of the roof of the catacombs, and was backed by one of their circumscribing walls of solid granite. It was in vain that Fortunato, uplifting his dull torch, endeavored to pry into the depths of the recess. Its termination the feeble light did not enable us to see. Proceed, I said. Herein is the Amontillado. As for Lucchesi,
he is an ignoramus,
interrupted my friend, as he stepped unsteadily forward, while I followed immediately at his heels. In an instant, he had reached the extremity of the niche, and finding his progress arrested by the rock, stood stupidly bewildered. A moment more, and I had fettered him to the granite. In its surface were two iron staples, distant from each other about 2 feet horizontally. From one of those depended a short chain, and from the other a padlock. Throwing the links about his waist, it was but the work of a few seconds to secure it. He was much too astonished to resist. Withdrawing the key, I stepped back from the recess. "Pass your hand," I said, "over the wall. You cannot help feeling the nitre. Indeed, it is very damp. Once more, let me implore you to return. No? Then I must positively leave you. But I must first render you all the little attentions in my power."
"The Amontillado?"
ejaculated my friend, not yet recovered from his astonishment. "True," I replied, "the Amontillado." As I said these words, I busied myself among the pile of bones which I had before spoken. Throwing them aside, I soon uncovered a quantity of building stone and mortar. With these materials, and with the aid of my trowel, I began vigorously to wall up the entrance of the niche. I had scarcely laid the first tier of my masonry when I discovered the intoxication of Fortunato had in a great measure worn off. The earliest indication I had of this was a low moaning cry from the depths of the recess. It was not the cry of a drunken man. There was then a long and obstinate silence. I laid the second tier, and the third, and the fourth, and then I heard the furious vibrations of the chain. The noise lasted for several minutes, during which, that I might hearken to it with more satisfaction, I ceased my labors and sat down upon the bones. When at last the clanking subsided, I resumed the trowel, and finished without interruption the fifth, the sixth, and the seventh tier. The wall was now nearly upon level with my breast. I again paused, and holding the flambeau over the masonwork, threw a few feeble rays upon the figure within. A succession of loud and shrill screams, bursting suddenly from the throat of the chained form, seemed to thrust me violently back. For a brief moment I hesitated. I trembled. Unsheathing my rapier, I began to grope with it about the recess. But the thought of an instant reassured me. I placed my hand upon the solid fabric of the catacombs and felt satisfied. I reapproached the wall. I replied to the yells of him who clamored. I re-echoed. I aided. I surpassed him in the volume and strength of his cries. I did this, and the clamor grew still. It was now midnight, and my task was drawing to a close. I had completed the eighth, the ninth, and the tenth tier. I had finished a portion of the last and the eleventh. There remained but a single stone to be fitted into place and plastered in. I struggled with its weight. I placed it partly in its destined position. But now there came from out of that niche a low laugh that erected the hairs on the back of my head. It was succeeded by a sad voice, which I had difficulty in recognizing as that of the noble Fortunato. He said,
"It's a very good joke indeed, an excellent jest. We may have many a rich laugh about it at the palazzo, over the wine."
"The Amontillado?" I said.
"Yes, the Amontillado. But is it not getting late? Will they not be awaiting us at the palazzo, the Lady Fortunato and the rest? Let us be gone."
"Yes," I said. "Let us be gone."
"For the love of God, Montresor!"
"Yes," I said. "For the love of God." But to these words I hearkened in vain for a reply. I grew impatient. I called out, "Fortunato!" No answer. I called again, "Fortunato!" No answer still. I thrust a torch through the remaining aperture left and let it fall within. There came forth in return only the jingling of the bells. My heart grew sick on account of the dampness of the catacombs. I hastened to make an end of my labor. I forced up the last stone into position. I plastered it up. Against the new masonry, I re-erected the old rampart of bones. For half a century, no mortal has disturbed them. In pace requiescat. We'll be right back.
Here at CITR, we're
Moontan Nocturnal, vinyl-consuming animals drifting easy through friendly space.
And we're
The Villains.
And
Nardwuar the Human Serviette from Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada.
We're
Dark Space punctuated by planets.
And we're
Patrick Swayze.
And we're
God, the Devil, Hell, Heaven! Do you understand? Finally!
But CITR is not a
commercial radio station.
Which means we need the help of listeners like you. Donate to CITR's 2013 Fund Drive, February 28th to March 8th. Our goal is to raise $30,000 to help purchase new soundboards for all three studios. To donate, call 604-822-8648. That's 604-822-8648. Or go online to CITR.ca. And thanks for supporting community radio.
And welcome back to CITR 101.9 FM, and this is Scald's Hall here in very soggy Vancouver, and it's actually raining today. Who knew? Raining in the winter. It usually does. And just so that you know, we are indeed going to be having our fun drive starting next week, and it's not for several days yet. However, the next Scald's Hall show will happen during the fun drive. So the very next time you hear us, we will be doing a special episode of Scald's Hall for a fun drive. And we're going to do something that we normally don't do, something we don't have the resources to do every week. We're going to actually produce and perform and record and present to you for your listening pleasure a radio drama, dramatizing the necessity for community radio in general. Why do we exist? Why should we continue to exist? What do we do when we do fun drives? Why do we need this money? We will answer all those questions in a humorous and dramatic way next week, hopefully. And you can go on to our websites and just begin donating now if you would like. And then just a heads up and announcement, Radio Zero with Tyler and Cam is not going to happen live this week because of various intervening circumstances, and so we're going to be having preempted programming instead. And then one other thing, the week after the Fun Drive week, this is 2 weeks from today, Friday, March 8th is a very special day. Friday, March 8th, for those of you who do not know, is International Women's Day, which, as a bit of interesting trivia, is a national holiday in the People's Republic of China. And so there is going to be special programming played that day. And while you may hear repeats of interviews of female authors who have been on the show, and one more who's going to be coming up for the first week of March. Scald's Hall itself is going to be preempted, and so we're going to have the special episode of the Fun Drive next week, and then the week after that, you're going to have some very special programming for International Women's Day, and so regular broadcasts of Scald's Hall will resume after that, but I will be here next week, and I encourage anyone and everyone who's listening to this program, who listens to any programs on CITR 101.9 FM and enjoys them, to indeed get out there and pledge. Come on down, call us. We're going to be having volunteers on the phone and lots of other things, and there's going to be prizes. For Scald's Hall, for example, I have two tickets to the play we heard interviewed about today. I have two complimentary tickets for Fawlty Towers that I will be giving away as prizes. And if you would like them, if you would love to see a show, then go on to the Scald's Hall website and donate there, and then you can come and see a very, really, very, very good show. A really good show right here. So in just a moment, we're going to have some special programming, so stay tuned to us here at CITR 101.9 FM.